The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors. Keep on, keep on.
Good morning and welcome to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. I'm Sean Sayre here with you this morning. It's Thursday, February 9th, and it is kind of calm outside. It's not all that wet and raining or anything yet, but I think we're going to see a little of that in the forecast today, and but not too cold. I hear it's also going to be in the 40s and 50s at some point for February 9th. Just crazy winter we're having. So looking forward to a great show here this morning. We have Brittany Polito in the house. She is the Pittsfield Bureau Chief for iBerkshires, and we're going to be talking about all kinds of things that are happening in and around Pittsfield with the biggest, hottest stories. Talk about what she does as a Bureau Chief and a reporter here in Pittsfield and some of the most memorable stories she's had on the beat. So looking forward to that conversation with Brittany. First, we're going to take a bit of a break and listen to the weather, find out what's in store for us today. Let's take it away.
Berkshire weather.
Here is your WTBR forecast from BerkshireWeather.com for Thursday, February 9th. Greetings. Today, cloudy. A high of 43 with some rain. Tonight, cloudy. A low of 41 with some rain. Tomorrow, partly cloudy with a high of 47. That's your latest WTBR forecast. For more weather forecasts and education, go to BerkshireWeather.com. I'm Caleb Klein for WTBR, and I hope you all have an amazing day. Cheers, everyone.
All right, Jacob, thank you very much for that. We didn't quite hit that 50 number from what I heard there. It was close, though, 47 tomorrow. My goodness, that's warm for early February. But we'll see what's in store for us next. Some of that snow's melting. I know the ski resorts still have some snow up on them, but maybe not in your driveway or front lawn, which, you know, hey, we'll take it for what it is. You don't have to shovel it anyway. So, hey, welcome to the program this morning, Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM. Joining me here live in the studio this morning, Brittany Polito. Good morning, Brittany. How are you?
Good morning. How are you? Thank you for having me.
Oh, absolutely. Glad to have you here. And, always interesting to hear the perspective of the stories going on in the community from the people who a lot of times are the closest to some of that action, you know. The meetings that go on, the events that are happening, you're right there to see it.
Yeah, so you guys are too.
Yeah, we are sometimes. Sometimes that's true. lay the land for us a little bit here. Tell us how you got to do what you do at iBerkshires, and what is your sort of general charge as a reporter and a bureau chief?
Sure. Yeah. So, always been interested in writing since a very young age. Mm. I graduated from MCLA with an English degree. I saw the job posting and I was like, this seems like a perfect thing for me to do. So I wrote an example story about a restaurant, and I sent it in and I said, hey, I'd love to work for you, and a few other writing samples. And yeah, the rest is history, yeah. I guess. That was in 2020. Mm-hmm. So.
Wow.
Yeah, so started in the fall of 2020. Very, very interesting time to start as a reporter. Everything was virtual, and slowly since 2020, you know, we're pretty much back to in person.
Yeah,
still some.
I would say that's probably an odd time to start a job, right? Is right when the pandemic changes everything.
Yeah. Lots of screenshots of Zoom meetings. That's probably, that's something that I don't miss. Mm. I like actually having photos for stories now and having that person-to-person communication.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would say a lot of the stories in the last few years have kind of been a narrative about, you know, this event is back after the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
It was virtual or it didn't happen for a couple of years and now it's back. Yeah, so
it did change everything, you know, and there was so much that that was different for that period of time. And now is only starting to get back to, you know, what we used to think of as normal. But even that now has probably changed a bit, right?
Yeah. A lot of things I just recently experienced for the first time because, you know, they didn't happen because of the pandemic or they were virtual.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was really cool when the parades came back.
Yeah.
Especially the Halloween parade. I love Halloween, so that was really cool.
Yeah, we found it was very difficult, you know, creating a virtual experience for a parade, even though we did it.
You did a great
job. A couple
job.
Of times. But yeah, nothing beats, you know, being there in person around people and experiencing things.
Yeah.
So, and as an English major, what, if anything, surprised you the most about a job in journalism? Because it isn't necessarily exactly the same, right? It's a writing job for sure.
Yeah.
But there's so much more to the part of journalism and reporting and bringing stories to people, right? What was different about that?
I would say it's kind of, you're kind of flip-flopping your style. So, you know, in English, a lot of, you know, the five paragraph essay is the kind of basis of what you do. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, my thesis was much longer than that. But so, you know, in reporting, you really want to get people to understand and be interested by the story in the first line without giving them too much information.
Mm-hmm.
So that is something that, you know, that you have to learn. It's not something that is, you know, natural if you're an English major.
Right. Different than writing a paper for a teacher and for a grade, right?
Yeah. Honestly, you know, you look to your editor, you see what they're doing with your stories and you learn from that.
Mm.
You know, that's been a really, you know, Tammy is great.
Mm-hmm.
She's our editor.
Tammy Daniels.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I've learned a lot from that. And now I find myself writing the story in my head as I'm there already, you know. I'll jot down a few lines and, you know, I'll be like, yeah, this is what it is. Sometimes it changes. I know that some reporters will kind of write a story backwards. They will start with, you know, the guts of the story. They'll start with the middle and they'll
put that up front so that they can hook people into the story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, I usually will start with the lead and then go from there, but sometimes it works out that the lead is not what you thought it was.
Right.
So.
Well, that's interesting, right? Because you got to go into stories as objectively as you can, I would think, right? You don't want to necessarily come in with a preconceived notion of what the story is about. You may have some notion of it, but as the thing unfolds, right, you're reporting on what is actually happening and what, you know, what the real story is that might not have been the apparent one as you came into it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Definitely sometimes in city council meetings, the story that I thought was going to be the big story was passed with no conversation. And what I didn't expect to be my story was a kind of, you know, unsuspecting agenda item that wound up generating a lot of conversation. So you really never know.
Hmm. And then you get a charter objection.
Yes.
Which kind of throws the wrench in all the works, right?
Yes. Yeah. You know, sometimes that was, I think that was the first charter objection I believe that I had experienced in my reporting.
Right around the budget time last year, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a big story across all the outlets.
Yeah. Did you see that coming? Did you see that something like that happening where the whole budget process was going to get derailed because a counselor could throw a charter objection?
No, I didn't. And there was, you know, when it happened, there was a big kind of moment of what happens now. I remember the mayor brought the media to the, you know, to her office to explain what was going to happen after the charter objection. And so, I didn't expect it. I was definitely, you know, you always expect some kind of debate, especially around budget season. Those are long, very long meetings. And it was unexpected.
How do the stories come to you? Because I'm sure a lot of them start with, you know, an event that's happening or, like you said, the mayor invites the press in to discuss. Mm-hmm. And obviously that's one side of a story is when the mayor tells you something, but there might be another side to a story somewhere, right?
Yeah.
And then are there stories that come in other ways that we don't think of as sort of the standard, you know, okay, these things are happening, we're going to report on them because a press release came out.
Yeah.
How do you find some of those other, you know, more difficult stories?
Yeah. You know, hate to admit it, but Facebook.
Yeah.
You learn.
Social media.
You learn. Yeah. Mm. Social media. You, I see events happening on social media and, you know, I'll inquire and say, hey, I'd love to write a feature about your event. You know, a charitable event. Mm-hmm. Definitely during the holiday season time when things are very quiet in the city, I go on social media. I look for events. I go on city websites and look for events. Just to see what's going on. Like, I remember I wrote a Thanksgiving Eve story this year about things going on Thanksgiving Eve. Because, you know, it's kind of become this thing where people go out the night before Thanksgiving Eve. So, yeah, I went on Facebook. I looked for events that were going on and I wrote a story about
Interesting.
That. Yeah.
Now, you know, that's another trend I'd like to talk to you about because I think a lot of people now are getting their news sometimes solely from social media and including people that post things that may or may not be true. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the comment section, which is filled with experts. people that seem to know everything about everything is in the comment section.
Yeah.
Now, there's certainly no problem getting a story, you know, lead or something from a social media or Facebook. But tell us the difference between that and actually reporting on a story and sort of going all the way through getting both sides and coming up with something that is considered news and not just sort of hearsay.
Yeah. I think the defining factor is really opinion. You know, your professional news source won't have opinion in it. That's not, you know, taking away from bloggers. Bloggers are an important part of, you know, the media. It's just a different kind. It's a different kind of reporting. You know, I wouldn't say that one is better than another. I'm a reporter, so I'm probably a bit objective to my job, but you know,
I mean, there's always bias everywhere, right? And that's one of the things reporters always try to admit is that you cannot be unbiased completely. All you can do is make an effort to share both sides of the story or to come to what the real story is somewhere, where the truth is.
Yeah. You know, I like to write my stories, especially about city meetings and stuff, so that people who maybe don't watch city meetings can just understand what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no agenda behind it other than wanting, you know, people to understand what's going on and to, you know, have a good explanation of things that are very complicated. 'Cause, you know, there's big words in agendas and, you know, motions and all that stuff it's hard to understand if it's not something you do all the time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean.
Yeah, I would say that's very true, right? Is that unless you're a real city council junkie, you watch this stuff all the time, or you're a reporter or somebody sort of in the inner circle of knowing how that works, it can seem very foreign.
Yeah.
To people, especially if you're coming to watch a city council meeting because a particular issue hits you, you know, it's hitting your neighborhood or it's hitting something that you really care about, but you're not generally paying attention. Yeah. Now you're watching that meeting and something happens. It's a procedure and like, okay, what just happened there? Did that pass? Did it not pass? Did it go to committee? What happened?
Yeah.
What is going to be next? And how do you help your readers from iBerkshires understand sort of the machinations of that?
Yeah, I guess just say it. Probably the second line of my stories is usually this is what happened and this is where it will go next. It's important to not, for example, when you're writing that something was approved in a subcommittee, it's important to make it clear that it has to go to the council before a final approval.
Mm.
You know, because some things. You know, some things might be alarming to people and they might think, oh, it was, I didn't know about this. So, yeah, you know, just make it clear.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and you have to do that. And sometimes it just requires that little bit more of an explanation. Yeah. Something happened, and here's why. Because the city council rule allows, you know, such and such to happen.
So. Yeah. Also, don't be afraid to ask questions. You know?
Yeah.
Nobody is above clarification. Mm. I will go up to a city councilor or the president after a meeting and I'll be like, hey, you know, I didn't really understand this, or what was that vote? Mm. I didn't really get that. So, yeah.
Do you have to chase after them a little bit after the meeting to make sure you can get that clarification in?
I mean, they definitely like to, you know, get out of there or, you know, socialize a little after. But, it, you know, the desk is not very far. So I just kind of scurry around the little divider and get right to it. Yeah.
Did you ever have anyone try to avoid you for the questions? Did they see you coming?
No. I think I'm overall pretty unthreatening as a reporter. That's what it seems. Mm. So yeah, I try to not intimidate or anything. So yeah, people are usually pretty cool about talking.
We're speaking with Brittany Polito. She is the Pittsfield Bureau Chief for iBerkshires, the online news source in the Berkshires, really covering northern and central Berkshire County. Does iBerkshires get down to South County at all, or is that really not sort of your jurisdiction?
So we do when we're invited, obviously. Mm-hmm. You know,
or if it's a countywide issue that's happening, say, in Great Barrington or something like that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I've done some stuff down there. I've definitely covered, I went down to Great Barrington to cover debates during debate season last year. I did a W.E.B. Du Bois event. Mm. I do things. Mm. The difference is we don't cover meetings there. Mm. So the coverage is kind of limited to special events, things that we're invited to. The thing that we do is, obviously, during graduation season, we cover every single high school in the county. Okay. We do. So I do make it down to South County for graduations.
Yeah, it's sometimes a very long county, and it's hard to get to all these events. And, you know, we all know Pittsfield has a lot of meetings.
Yeah.
and all kinds of different stuff, right? And so are you finding some of the more interesting stories at the big meetings, like city council, or do you find some very interesting nuggets at some of the smaller ones? And I know we're going to get into a couple of the ones you've been covering recently.
The smaller ones.
Yeah, those are more interesting. Why is that?
You know, I kind of just love seeing something that maybe might not be significant to everybody, but I find it really interesting and really diving into it and writing a story on it. I think that, you know, definitely subcommittees, sometimes people don't watch. So,
but that's where a lot of the work happens, right?
It is,
and that's where the discussion comes up.
And if it's a really big thing, it will come back to the council. So, you know, if you do that work in the subcommittee, then you'll be prepared for when it comes to the council. So, you know, that's kind of my view on it. I've gotten a lot of interesting stories at, like, Parks Commission. You know, a lot of interesting stuff happens in parks and, you know, historical commission with buildings. I, you know, I love old buildings, so I find the historical commission very interesting.
Well, so, what's interesting about that, too, to me, I think, is that there's a lot of decisions that happen at some of the commissions where they have actual power to, you know, make something happen or not happen that doesn't have to go to the city council.
Yeah.
And, you know, for one of the ones I would say is zoning board, licensing board, as you mentioned, parks commission. They they have direct control over things where I think sometimes we hear from people at the city council open mic where they are petitioning the city council, hey, we don't really like this decision that was happening at the parks commission or whatever. And again, it's one of those procedural things we were just talking about. You have to know that that power rests in that commission and not necessarily with the city council.
The licensing board, that's another one. That's where I go to kind of learn about new restaurants that are coming in. Because when a new restaurant comes in, they have to get their license approved, their liquor license approved by the licensing board. So, yeah, you know, it's a really good tool to just go. You know, those meetings don't always have a story out of them, mm-hmm. but sometimes I've gotten like three stories out of one subcommittee meeting because there was so much going on.
Yeah. And these are stories that impact, you know, a good number of people in the community. Sometimes, like you said, they don't seem to. They kind of coast along and they go as expected. And then every once in a while, you know, you're watching, you're like, did I just hear is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
So let's talk about some of those interesting stories. The one that just jumped out at me when I was looking at iBerkshire's this morning was permitting of chickens.
Yeah.
Right? And now with the price of eggs, the way it is, maybe the folks that had chickens were onto something, right?
Right. Yeah. So that has been a thing over the past, let's see, I have all the dates here. But so I would say in the fall, Councillor Kalinowski came to the ordinance and rules, I believe, and she was contacted by another resident who was just like, hey, chicken permitting is pretty expensive. It's over $500.
Really?
Yep. And so that is just the licensing fee. And that requires, you know, notification and all that stuff, legal stuff.
And it's a zoning board issue, right?
It is a zoning board issue. Yeah. So the resident's argument was, you know, she was like, this is expensive. And a lot of people have chickens because they want to, you know, provide for their families, provide eggs. And so the proposal that they had was to take it out of the Zoning Board of Appeals and put it into the health department, or just make it a kind of a general license, like a dog license.
Basically making it easier for people to do without having to go through jumping through all the hoops to do it.
Yeah. And another thing that...
And what happened with that issue?
Yeah. So it did... It kind of back and forth between the zoning and the health department. I believe the city council did weigh in on it at some point too. And so essentially the health department, they said, you know, we think that the process is effective where it is now. And they were worried that it might overtax the, you know, the department. And so the consensus of the Board of Health and the health department was kind of, you know, we wouldn't like to take that on. But then at the last ordinances and rules meeting, which was on Monday, the ordinance and rules voted to look into having it as kind of like a dog license. And so what they did was they referred it. And this is another where you have to be clear. So they referred it to the city solicitor to draft an ordinance.
Okay.
They didn't want to approve anything without having an ordinance in place. There was a little disagreement on that. Councillor Kenneth Warren, Ward 1, wanted to, you know, get it in place right away. And the rest of the ordinance and rules that were there were like, well, we want to have an ordinance in place first. So, you know, so they're going to refer it to the city solicitor, who is also another term. He is essentially the city's lawyer.
Right.
And yeah, he's going to draft an ordinance. And I believe it will either have to come back to the subcommittee or go to the city council. But, you know, they agreed that they don't want to have it in Zoning Board of Appeals anymore.
Interesting.
The other piece of that is that Councillor Kalinowski pointed out is that it requires a deed attachment on your house if it's in the Zoning Board of Appeals.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was another point.
And that's, you know, very complex, and it does take, it can't happen overnight.
No.
As much as we would all like it to happen that way. It has to be legal.
Yeah.
So it has to go through the solicitor. And as we know, things that go through a subcommittee to do sort of the groundwork on figuring all this stuff out, the committee could vote to not recommend something to happen. Then it goes to the city council, and the city council can actually reverse that opinion and vote it in, or vice versa. So lots of things can happen. And that's why, you know, I think that's why people are interested in watching what happens at a local level. And we this is democracy, right? At the most basic form, this is where we have how decisions are made.
Right, yeah.
So what are stories are happening right now? I know we were talking about Springside House. That's kind of a big deal. You took a tour of that building recently.
Yes, I did. So what's happening with Springside House? Essentially, so it's been going on for a long time, longer than I have been a reporter. So Springside House is, you know, a very old part of Pittsfield history.
It's one of the oldest houses, I think, in the city.
Right? One of the oldest houses, yeah. So I believe, let's see, I have it here. So it is, I believe, like 1860s-ish.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, the city of Pittsfield was, I think, founded in 1761.
That's right. Yes. You got it.
So, yeah. So it's very old. Essentially, it has been. It was used by the city from the 50s to 2007. Mm-hmm. It was used as city offices, and it housed a ton of local recreation groups, the Winter Festival, Winter Carnival, speed skating group, Parks Department. Mm-hmm. Lots of stuff happened there. Mm-hmm. So on Tuesday, the media was invited to the mayor's office for an announcement, and the announcement was that the city got $500,000 in a Save America's Treasures grant. This is the same grant that was given to the Colonial Theater.
Yeah.
And also before my time, but yeah.
Federal grant like that can really spark things to happen, right?
Yeah.
As we've seen with the Colonial Theater.
Oh, yeah. And a piece of that is it requires a match, and they're proposing free cash for the match.
Mm-hmm.
That's, I believe, going to be taken up at the next city council meeting. Right. I haven't seen the agenda yet.
I think
you're
right. Yeah, on the 14th.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, that was a big announcement. And we had our little press conference. We asked some questions. Essentially, she was saying, and the Jim McGrath of the Parks Department was saying, that they want to make it a place for the community. They, you know, they're looking into maybe having a tenant in there, a community group that is aligned with the city's goals. And, you know, there's not too much planning ahead of what it's actually going to look like inside and what's going to happen. There was an analysis that was done, like really in-depth analysis. And yeah, the first part of the renovations were finished a few years ago. The house had lots of peeling paint, and it was redone. Jim pointed out that all the windows were redone in the house, and there's a lot of windows.
Yeah.
And that's a big thing for an old house,
right?
To have working windows.
And what was the overall budget that they expected to renovate that building?
Yeah, so the overall budget is, so for the interior renovations, total $3.5
million.
Mm. And so, you know, this
a pretty significant commitment over a long period of time.
Yeah. So the exterior renovations were $1.5 million. And so, yeah, the $1 million, if the free cash is approved, and then, you know, they don't know where the rest will come from.
Right.
But well, yeah. And
stay
then
tuned on that one, as they say.
Yeah. So we got to have a tour of the Springside House after the press conference. And that was super cool. I didn't know we were having a tour. So
did you bring your camera?
I didn't. But, you know, I had my phone.
Yeah.
And I took a ton of video.
That is a camera, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Probably a better camera in a lot of ways than you could get these days.
Yeah. It's a few years old, but the new one's totally great. So, yeah.
And that's part of your job, too, right? You do take a lot of photographs while you're at events.
I do. And
kind of
do
it all there.
I do, yeah. And I do have a camera, and I use that sometimes. But sometimes you're out and something happens, and you have to just kind of whip out your phone and, you know? So, yeah, we got a tour.
The best camera is the one you have with you.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, I took videos, and, you know, it was like three stories of Pittsfield history.
Hmm.
We essentially found this room on the, I think, second or third floor, and there was all these old signs from past Pittsfield, you know, events and stuff, and Parks Commission minutes and binders. Mm. It was super cool.
Yeah. So much history, right? And it's the house itself and then what it contains. So it's fascinating. What are some of the other things? Taconic being voted in as a vocational high school starting in the fall. Big story, right, for Pittsfield.
It was, yeah.
A couple minutes before the break. Tell us what the story is on that.
Sure, yeah. So this has been kind of something that's been in the talks. I believe it was kind of in the background since they had the new school completed. $120 million school was completed in 2018. I think kind of the expectation was that this might eventually happen. Official talk about it, I believe, began like last year-ish, a year ago. And, you know, there was an official recommendation last year. And then you know, they kind of took the year to get input from people and stuff like that. And then last month, the vote was delayed because of the snowstorm. It was delayed a week because the meeting had to be postponed. But yeah, they voted to transition to Conic into an all vocational school starting in the fall. So,
and that's completely a school committee decision, right?
It is, yeah.
So remember, when you're voting in the fall, when you're voting for school committee members, they have real power.
Yeah.
And you better vote for people that believe in the things that you believe in, because they do make decisions like this. And,
they do.
You know, that they're important.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Brittany, actually, we're coming to the top of the hour. Believe it or not, we've already burned through a half an hour talking about fun stuff, and we've got a lot of topics left.
We do.
So this is great, and we will be right back here after our quick break. This is Good Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. We will return in just a moment.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR-FM.
Here we go again.
Excellent!
I demand more! 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs to help our community thrive. Greylock Federal, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org.
Missed an episode of your favorite show? Have no fear, because we have podcasts. Type in WTBRFM.com/podcast on your favorite browser and search for your favorite show. It's that simple.
Down low, up and in. She'll go to the free throw line. Jamie Duquette. Alicia tries a long three. Makes it. Brown high off the glass. No good. Munja gets the rebound. Puts it up and in. And he'll go back to the free throw line.
Mo Bamba said get out of town.
R.C. Jackson for three. He got it. It's taken away. And Taconic's going to win the basketball game.
Our next live broadcast is Thursday, February 9th, as the Pittsfield High girls welcome Westfield. Live coverage begins at 5:25 p.m. only on PCTV.
WTBR-FM is listener-supported radio. That means we depend on your donations to keep the station on the air. All the local content and the music you love requires your support. You can make your donation today at WTBRFM.com by calling 445-4234 or stopping by our studio at 4 Federico Drive in Pittsfield. You'll be glad you did. Pittsfield Community Radio, for the love of radio.
Hello, Phil Tierney here, the host of Berkshire Jazz, where I play all the young tigers and old lions of jazz every Saturday evening from 8 to 10 on WTBR 89.7, Pittsfield Community Radio. Join me Saturday at 8. And if you know someone who likes and enjoys this great American classical music, tell them about us. Spread the word. Jazz is alive and well on WTBR 89.7. Thanks for listening.
Are you struggling with your pet? Berkshire Humane Society is here to help. We have a pet food pantry, low-cost cat spay and neuters, free pet care advice, and if you're in the hospital or in crisis, temporary foster care. If you need to give up your pet, we'll accept your animal with kindness and find them the best new home possible. Please call Berkshire Humane Society at 413-447-7878.
Support for this public service announcement comes from Berkshire Community College and Park Square Productions. Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. BCC provides access to higher education to everyone in Berkshire County and beyond, offering more than 50 high-quality programs, small class sizes, and an affordable education to help their students of all ages achieve their dreams. At BCC, their middle name is Community. And from County Ambulance, providing quality, professional, efficient medical care and medical transportation services to the citizens of Berkshire County. Online at countyamb.com.
And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
All right, welcome back to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. It's 8:03. on Thursday, February 9th. And thanks for joining us here this morning. As always, we appreciate you listening to us and hope you get something good and interesting out of our programs here every morning on Morning Drive at 7:30 a.m. Bill Sturgeon, of course, hosts the first 3 days of the week, and then I'm in here for Thursday and Friday mornings, and always an interesting time. Brittany Polito is our guest here this morning, and we're talking about some of the issues that she's reporting on for iBerkshire's for Pittsfield, and some of those issues we're going to talk about, and maybe a couple of her favorite or most memorable reporting experiences. We'll get to that in just a minute. First, another look at the weather and find out what's in store today. Here we go.
Berkshire weather.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Today, partly sunny with a chance of rain this morning, then cloudy with rain likely this afternoon. Highs in the lower 40s. South wind 5 to 10 miles per hour with gusts up to 20 miles per hour, increasing to 15 to 20 miles per hour with gusts up to 30 miles per hour this afternoon. Chance of rain 70%. Tonight, mostly cloudy. Rain likely in the evening, then a chance of showers after midnight. Night is cool with lows in the lower 40s. South wind 15 to 20 miles per hour with gusts up to 40 miles per hour. Chance of rain 70%. Friday, mostly cloudy. A chance of showers in the morning. Breezy with highs in the mid-40s. Temperature falling to around 40 in the afternoon. West wind 20 to 25 miles per hour with gusts up to 45 miles per hour. Chance of rain 30%. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
And we thank our weather robot for that forecast. Rainy and windy is what it sounds like to me. But, you know, it is what it is. It's not 12 inches of snow, at least. So again, welcome back to Morning Drive. Sean Sayre here with you, and Brittany Polito joins us. Good morning again, Brittany. Thanks for being here this morning.
Thank you for having me.
You bet. So we were talking about Springside House when we had to take the break. Talk about a couple more items. We've got, of course, more talk about bike lanes, the issue that just won't die here in Pittsfield. And, the bike lanes have been in... on North Street is what we're specifically talking about, right? From Park Square down to or up to Berkshire Medical Center.
Yeah.
Those have been in place in one configuration or another for a couple of seasons now, a couple of years. And now there's some talk about maybe putting that up to a vote of the voters in November, right? So that's a process in itself.
Yeah. So, So in 2020, the city got a grant. It was about $240, and it was a shared streets and spaces grant. So that was to support bike lanes, curb extensions, vehicle lane reductions, and outdoor seating areas. They call them parklets, kind of the things that jut out from the sidewalk on North Street. So that was implemented. The first bike lane configuration was actually different than it is now. So at first there was one travel lane, and then there was the bike lane in the middle. Or I'm sorry, there was parking. It was the travel lane and then parking, and the bike lane was on the other side.
Right. And that didn't really work for a lot of people.
Yeah, it didn't work out for people. So they changed it to flip around the parking and the bike lane. So yeah, now we have one travel lane and a buffered bike lane, what they call it, and parking on the curb. And you know, it's been a hot topic, definitely. There's been different views on it. There was a safety study that was done that said that I don't think I have it here, but it did reduce accidents.
Yeah, the general upshot was that it was safer with the bike lanes in place.
Yes, and specifically also with the single travel lane. Mm-hmm. That was another point of the study. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's been a hot topic. And
so what's the movement then to place it on the ballot instead of having the elected officials or the professionals at City Hall make the decisions about how a road works? Mm-hmm. Why put that to the voters?
So the bike lanes have been something that Karen Kalinowski, councilor at large, has spoken about since I first interviewed her when she was running for the office. And so she said, why don't we just let the people decide? And at the subcommittee meeting, it passed 5-4. And that was, so 5-4 vote, but there were two counselors absent. So, you know, I don't know how it would have turned out if there were a full quorum, but, you know, so she said, let's just put it in the hands of the voters. A lot of the counselors agreed, you know, in for the sake of democracy. And so,
but there's quite a procedure, though, to get it on the ballot, right? It can't just be that you have a 5-4 vote in a subcommittee and then suddenly it appears on a ballot. There are lots of hoops that this has to go through before it gets there.
Yes. Yeah. And all of that is kind of a little unclear right now. There was a little, you know, feedback from the city solicitor. And I actually did ask, I was like, well, you know, is a question binding even? You know, let's say it passes. Is it binding? And
I think
that's
you can have a binding and a non-binding question, right? Depending on how it's written.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't know how that's going to go. And I guess we'll see. Like I said, the city council agenda, I don't think is out yet. So I haven't seen if it's, you know, made it to the full council yet. I believe it was in the traffic commission that conversation was had, but I cover so many meetings, but
and there are a lot of them for sure. So we'll follow that one as, and obviously that will be probably also an election topic, right?
Yeah.
That will be probably on the minds of voters and candidates as this municipal election starts to unfold. Candidates can start to take their papers out. I think April 3rd is the first date, and they have to be returned sometime in July or August, I think, and then the ballot certified, and then we'll know who actually is running for city council, for mayor, for school committee, city clerk, all the municipal offices that we vote for. But certainly some of the issues we're talking about today in February, they're really just germinating for what's going to happen, you know, later on in the year.
Yeah, and there's another also with the North Street traffic. Downtown Pittsfield Inc. is proposing diagonal parking. They surveyed downtown their members and downtown residents and business owners, and you know, there was a lot of support for diagonal parking. So that's another thing that's on the table. You know, we'll see, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. Lots of those things come up and get proposed, and then when they get aired out, you start to hear where people sort of sit on the issues one way or the other. And that, you know, gives you a chance to decide which of the people, your candidate or your incumbent, you might vote for. So very interesting.
Yeah, we were asking about bike lanes in the last election.
Yeah,
that was a topic.
It will not die. Will not die. So other things, we've got a rail trail extension that you were reporting on. That's in the works right now for people. Again, we're talking about bikes, but there are a lot of people that love the Ashuwiltacook Trail, and this is an extension of that, right, into Pittsfield.
Yeah. So that actually, you know, our extension that brought it into Pittsfield was finished last year, I believe. And so now, so that extension ends behind Aldi next to John's Building Supply.
Over on Crane Ave.
Yeah. So that extension is going to go underneath the Dalton Ave Bridge. It is a bridge.
Yeah, it's an overpass.
Yeah. So it's going to go underneath there. It's going to go behind the shops that I recently discovered were called the Uncommit Brook Shops. Yeah. So I was like, so
what most people in Pittsfield called the old Bradley's Plaza, even though that building is completely gone now, there are people that will still call it that for years, but we all know where that
Bradley's
is, right?
Plaza. Yeah. So it's going to go behind there. It's going to come out by O'Connell on Merrill Road, and there's going to be, you know, some parking there, and, you know, that's kind of going to make way for it to extend more into the city. Obviously the next proposal is not on the table yet, but you know, the further plans for the bike trail bring it through the whole county.
So
you know, we'll see where that goes. I heard that, you know, the proposal for the next extension is to go down Merrill and come out on East Street kind of by the baseball park. And you know, of course, the bike facilities master plan has a lot of, you know, stuff that deals with those routes as well. And yeah, so
it doesn't seem very controversial of an issue. It seems like most people will support it. I don't know where the funding comes from. Maybe that's where some of the issues will arise.
So the funding, actually, So the funding is actually state and federal. Mm. So the
maybe no impact to Pittsfield.
Yeah. Mm. So it's a share of, let's see, the federal aid program is providing 80% mm-hmm. of the construction cost for this extension. And the other 20% is going to be the Federal Highway Administration.
Okay.
So, yeah.
That's good.
You know? Yeah. So it's
usually the issues around bike paths are centered around the backyards of people's houses and things like that, right?
Yep.
But when it gets too close to neighborhoods,
yeah.
you usually get to hear from people. But this particular extension, I don't think that gets near any residential. This is all really industrial land.
It is, yeah. And I wasn't around for the beginning of the talks about the extension that was finished. But, you know, it goes behind that neighborhood on Cheshire Road.
Yeah.
But I think it's pretty set back. Mm-hmm. I don't think you can see it from yeah. anyone's backyard,
a little further,
as I know of.
Yeah, yeah, further away.
Yeah.
So, Brittany Polito from iBerkshires, let's talk about some of the most memorable stories and experiences that you've had as a reporter already, because it doesn't take long, really, to get in and say that a story has an impact on you, right? It's
yeah.
it's impossible to say that you're completely removed and impartial from every story. Things impact you as a human, right?
Yeah.
What are some of
yeah.
those that you remember?
You know, there's a lot of sad ones that I don't like to remember. But I would say one of the first ones that made a big impact on me was I was there for the puppy fight that came in from the Humane Society from down south. So there were I think 42 dogs that came in on a flight, and they were puppies. And
that's
I was
a lot of dogs.
Yeah. I was at the Pittsfield Municipal Airport to see them all arrive, and I actually teared up. I'm a dog lover. It was really cool. And they all found homes very quickly, but
that's pretty amazing
if
you think about
yeah.
it. For a place the size of Pittsfield and Berkshire County.
Yeah.
And it came into the Berkshire Humane Society, right? They're the ones that handled it.
Yeah.
42 puppies
yeah.
found homes.
Mm-hmm.
That's just an amazing story.
Yeah. And you could just hear all of them when they opened the door. You know, maybe a little scared, but like yipping, and it was a real story of hope.
Mm-hmm.
For me, at least.
Yeah.
I felt silly like tearing up on the job about it, but you know, it was really nice. Mm-hmm. And I'll always remember that. Yeah. It was also only about a month after I started the job.
Mm.
And it was still very much, you know, it was 2020. Mm-hmm. There were not many in-person events. So
right.
it was really cool to be able to witness this.
How do you translate that emotion into a story and really have your readers sort of feel what you're feeling and understand what's actually happening?
I think they can tell.
Yeah.
I think they can tell by the byline usually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, really just descriptive words, noises, sounds, smells, you know, descriptive things mm-hmm. that reminds the reader that you are a person and you were there experiencing it.
Yeah, for sure. Fascinating story. Talk about there's a mock plane crash in Peru.
Yeah.
So what's up with that?
That was another interesting one. So I believe that was last year. It was, you know, Berkshire County first responder training. And so it was a pretty long day. And it was a mock plane crash in the woods in Peru.
Hmm.
It was near the site where there was a plane crash in Peru many years ago. And you know what made it really memorable was that it was hands-on. It was very hands-on. Obviously, to cover the story, I had to go into the woods, and it was far into the woods,
yeah.
kind of, you know, where a plane crash would be if it happened. They had high schoolers, you know, pretending to be victims. They were, you know, in fake blood, and they were coming out of the woods.
So
and
very realistic. Huh?
Yeah, they were assigned injuries. Mm. They were given, you know, kind of a script to, not a script, but, you know,
yeah.
this is your injury. This is how you're supposed to act.
Sure.
Took them out on stretchers, gave them fake, you know, medical care. And you know, I rode out there on the back of I think it was a four wheeler with another reporter, and you know, I had the full helmet on, and you know, I was wearing white overalls. That was I really didn't plan well, but it's
things you learn, right?
Yeah.
Covering a training exercise for a plane crash.
Yeah. And you know, it was so cool. And it was one of those moments where it was like, wow, this is my job. And yeah, I don't know. It was cool.
Yeah, jobs in journalism are always adventurous in a lot of ways, different ways, right? Yeah. Whether you're sitting at a meeting or you're interviewing a candidate who's trying to run away from you, that's an adventure. or, you know, you find yourself on the back of a 4x4, you know, getting a white outfit dirty.
Yeah, it was a bumpy ride too.
Was it?
It was a blast. Yeah. It was a blast.
But obviously those training episodes are important for all the first responders.
Right.
And interesting, I think, to hear from the public's standpoint, those kinds of things go on because you don't want a team of first responders figuring this out as they go along. You want them to have the training ahead of time.
Yeah, yeah. I learned a lot. Something that stands out is that they kind of have a criteria. Like they go in and say, you know, can anyone hear me? And they get the survivors, and you know, then they'll unfortunately, you know, kind of treat people in the way of, you know, most urgent and, you know, people that can walk.
A triage,
and then, you know, if there are fatalities, you know, take them out. And that was, you know, they made it seem really real in the training exercise, and it was, you know, it was a lot.
Yeah, probably a lot to take in visually.
Yeah.
And then again, as we were talking about a moment ago,
right,
translating that into something where a reader can be there, right?
Yeah.
You're describing the scene to them, and they're getting them there in place to understand what you're seeing.
Right. And of course, you're in the woods with no cell service. So so you're working on pen and paper and camera. And, you know, it was like, wow, this is how they had to do it back in the day before we had our recording devices and stuff.
Like, you have this image, right, of the reporter with the old beat up brown hat and the pad, you know, and running after somebody with a microphone or whatever.
I'm just sticking my phone in people's face,
which
I feel bad about, but you know,
that's the job, right?
It is the job. It is the job.
And it is necessary and very actually good for democracy and for the public to have legitimate news sources that they can read and trust.
And accuracy too, you know, with our technology today, with transcribing devices and stuff like that, we can get quotes word for word. Mm. And, you know, that's important with accuracy and with setting the tone for a story.
Yeah. How has that changed things? Is it easier for you to use those things? Does it come with other challenges that you have to deal with?
Yeah. So I have always used a transcribing app on my phone. I would say it's definitely,
it's a tool of a trade now,
basically. It is, yeah. Mm-hmm. And all the other reporters that I've talked to also use it. It's nice to be able to scroll through something and see it in words. Sometimes it doesn't process when you're just listening to it or you're, you know, writing and doing a bunch of other things at once. So, yeah.
Well, I know just from doing interviews like this that a lot of times you're listening to a response that you've given as a question, but somewhere in the back of your mind, you're also formulating the next question.
Yeah.
Because if you don't do that, it doesn't work, right? And so I assume you're doing the same thing when you're asking questions to be able to report people's answers. You're also saying, okay, he just said this, but that means that I have a follow-up question, right?
Yeah.
And that's important too, but you're thinking about that and then trying to get the accurate quote. So I could see where that would be very, very handy to have.
It's something you learn as you go on.
Yeah. Other memorable stories.
Yeah. So the West Housatonic building auction. Mm. So,
and that was the old Racy's Mazda, right? That was that big building there almost to the corner of 41.
Yeah. So that building, I thought it was super interesting when it was going to be auctioned off. You know, I showed up not really knowing what it was going to be like. Mm-hmm. And I signed a waiver to go in.
Really?
Yeah.
Because why? Because it could be dangerous to walk into the building?
Yeah, just because it, you know, it had been sitting for a while and they just weren't sure. Just, you know, wanted to be safe.
Yep.
So, yeah, it was it really stands out because I was so proud of the photos that I took. And I really, a personal interest of mine is like kind of urban exploring kind of stuff. Hmm. You know, old buildings, abandoned buildings, historical. Hmm. I don't do it myself, but, you know, watch a lot of YouTube videos and stuff. So, yeah, I was really proud of the photos that I took. And you could, it was in a state where you could really see the old restaurant, you know, the old go-kart place. Huh. And
that was after it was an auto dealership, obviously, right?
Yeah. There were old phones. There were really old computers. And it was just, it was so cool. It was like a glimpse
of the past. Like a
time capsule,
right? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I took this photo of, and I think it's the photo that was used for the story in the, you know, the main photo. And it was of a round booth in the restaurant. And there was some, like, green stuff growing on the ground. And, you know, nature.
That's what the waiver was for right there, that green stuff.
Yeah, it's, like, kind of showing, like, age and, like, nature taking over indoor spaces, which is always cool.
Right. It's an experience for sure, right?
It was. Yeah. It really was. And, you know, best wishes to that building, whatever happens with it.
Yeah, it should be interesting. And and that's the thing, right, is to see old properties and buildings who that may not have had, you know, much of a future. Whatever happens to it, you know, it's progress. Yeah. And there are some buildings like Springside House where, you know, I could imagine the property out on West Housatonic isn't necessarily historic or beautiful in any particular way, but it could be reused. The whole property could be reused.
Yeah.
Springside House, you think of something that you want to preserve, right?
Yes.
That you want to have for the history of Pittsfield. And a lot of people think about, I wasn't around for it, but the Union Station demolition, which we hear a lot about down where Big Y is now.
Yeah.
That was a big beautiful old train station that fell into you know, disuse and disrepair, and instead of preserving it, saving it for another use, it was demolished. And you know, if anyone's interested in history and buildings, those are the kind of things you kind of wish you could step back in time and say, wait, let's do something different here. You know?
And those are the cautionary tales. You know, while we were having the tour of Springside House, Jim McGrath was saying, you know, look at Wacona Park.
Exactly.
Right now we're going through, we don't know if Wacona Park is going to be repaired or rebuilt. You know, there was some, you know, delays and maintenance and stuff like that. You know, it resulted in structural problems.
Yeah.
So yeah, kind of framed it as like a cautionary tale of like, we don't, you know, they don't want it to happen to Springside House.
Right.
So, you know, that was a reason for the investments, in their view.
And I know we've had Jim McGrath on this program, and I know we'll have him in the future too about Wacona Park as the that unfolds, because that's going to be a story that will be in the news, no doubt, for at least the next couple of years.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
One other story that hit the wire just today, I guess, was the Herberg Middle Schoolers thanking firefighters with gift baskets. Were you there for that one?
I was. I was at the fire department twice yesterday, so they saw a lot of me. And yeah, so as part of a civics project at Herberg Middle School, they were inspired by Damar Hamlin's incident on the field when he went into cardiac arrest.
Yep.
So at first they were thinking of raising money to donate to his charity. But the charity, the GoFundMe, had actually raised like $9 million. So the football player's family was actually like, hey, why don't you, you know, they didn't say it to the middle schoolers, but in general, they were like, thank you so much for the support, but you should direct these funds to local first responders. So they decided to make like gift baskets for the five fire departments and, you know, like coffee and tea and treats and stuff. And so they delivered that yesterday and it was really nice. You know, they were really proud.
Yeah, I'll bet. And that's a great civic effort, right? For young people to think that they've, you know, they're motivated to do something, and how can we best direct our efforts to something that can make a difference.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It really, I guess the kind of social studies curriculum is like focusing on civics. And, you know, it was also part of Governor Baker's civics requirement that he instated in 2018, kind of inspired by that. So, yeah, it's cool to see kids out here, you know, doing stuff.
For sure. Brittany Polito is the Pittsfield Bureau Chief for iBerkshires.com, and that is the place. I just gave you the website. So if you're interested in any of the stories that Brittany has been discussing here this morning, that's the place to go, iBerkshires.com. And how can people get a hold of you directly, Brittany, if they have an idea for a story or a tip or something that they'd like you to get into?
Yeah, best way is by email. So it's bpolito, P-O-L-I-T-O, at iBerkshires.com.
Okay, there you have it right there. This has been fascinating, Brittany.
Yeah.
Really liked talking with you this morning. We'll do it again for sure when we have more stories to talk about. Again, municipal election year, so I know we will certainly be talking a lot about big issues in town.
Yeah, we will be. Stay tuned.
All right. Thank you very much for being here and looking forward to we'll see you again. Folks, hope you have a great day. We will be back tomorrow with a discussion from City Councilor Pete White. Looking forward to that one. So have a great day, everybody, and stay out of the raindrops. We'll talk to you later. Thanks.